This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next-door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine. It's a Macca-free Saturday. Justine Delariva and myself in the driver's seat this morning. Justine.
Thanks, Taz. Our next guest is Jeff Sparrow. Jeff is a Walkley Award-winning writer, editor and broadcaster. He also writes about climate change and politics and has a presence in The Guardian. Jeff's got a new book out called Crimes Against Nature, and as we said at the top of the program, a very timely book. And so, Jeff, welcome to Joy Saturday Mag.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, it's Tass here. Good morning to you. I'm holding your brand new book, which I haven't yet read, but the reviews that I have read suggest that you're trying to find a positive angle on the climate change debate and discussion. Tell us about that. Tell us why you're trying to adopt a positive angle, especially when, you know, everybody I talk to and all the media coverage that I see says that this is a doom and gloom space. You know, just as we are now speaking, there are 14-year-olds marching down the street in Glasgow saying, you know, you political leaders are just not doing enough. So where's the positive angle in the climate change space?
Yeah, in fact, I think I would start with saying that is one of the positive angles for the climate change debate, the fact that there are so many people who are so deeply concerned about it. So the starting point for this book was to challenge the conventional narrative about climate change, which is that it's all of our fault. You know, the problem is that we're all too lazy and we're too greedy and we just want to use up all the resources and we don't care about the future. And, you know, despite the best intentions of politicians, we just can't be persuaded to get off our big asses and do anything. And when that's, I think, is the mainstream narrative, and it's deeply demobilising and deeply depressing, right? Like if we're told that people fundamentally are the problem, that we're almost like a plague on the planet, it's very difficult to see any solution. The thing is, however, when you go back and look at the history of environmental issues, in fact, you find a completely different story, that most of the environmentally destructive practices for which ordinary people are blamed are things that ordinary people did their absolute utmost to resist. So a very quick and simple example, we're often told that, you know, as consumers, we crave plastic packaging and, you know, we can't even be convinced to give up our plastic bags in the supermarket. Mm. In fact, to introduce plastic bags into the supermarkets was a massive PR campaign for the plastic manufacturers, because initially people didn't want them because they were accustomed to recycling. That was just what everyone did. And in fact, people started recycling the plastic bags when they were first being introduced. Yes. And that the plastic companies had to run a big campaign to stop that happening.
That's so true, Jeff, because when I think about, you know, what we do at home, you know, we separate our rubbish, we, you know, take our plastics now back to the supermarket to get recycled, and we look for cues on products, and we're now even trading our energy on apps. And often it is that question of, well, what more can we do, or that sense of, are we doing, you know, are we doing enough? And we need to sort of give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think we also need to realise that the same powerful corporations and politicians that blame us for climate change have done everything possible to make it almost impossible for us to take meaningful environmental action. So recycling is a really good example. So, you know, we're constantly told we should recycle, and we're constantly told it's our fault if we don't. The fact of the matter is the way the recycling industry has been set up, that our recycling makes almost no difference at all. Almost all of our recycling just goes straight into landfill. So the problem isn't people's intention to do something for the planet. The problem is that the structures of the world in which we live make it very, very difficult to do something meaningful. And I think that should be the starting point for our discussion of climate change. The problem is not the individual. The problem is the particular economic and political structures in which we live.
Look, I hear what you're saying, Jeff, and I do agree with you, actually, but there is a piece that's missing for me, and that is the leadership piece. And, you know, it's all very well for us, you know, on the ground to be sorting our rubbish and, you know, putting on our solar panels. But at the end of the day, what we really need is leadership in this nation. And I've got a Prime Minister who holds coal in Parliament as if it's like, you know, this sort of sacred object. Really? Is that leadership? Is that what we can expect from our political leaders?
Yeah, and in some ways, that is my argument. I think, yes, that is what we can expect from our political leaders, and that's why we cannot leave this issue to our political leaders, that they have a vested interest in the maintenance of a system that is based on the notion that every year the economy will expand and expand and expand, and if it doesn't expand by 3 or 4% each year, then this is a massive crisis. Well, you don't have to be Einstein to work out there is a fundamental opposition between the need for an infinitely expanding economy and a finite planet. So that's why I think we need to go back to really basic principles and say, okay, how is it that we live on this planet? How is it that we use resources? And how might we do things differently? And so one of the reasons I think it's so important to look at the history of the environmental movement is to discover, in fact, there are all kinds of examples of people living in fundamentally different ways, in ways that don't destroy nature, in fact, that improve nature and that lead to better, stronger, healthier ecosystems over tens of thousands of years. And once you see that history, then you realise, well, okay, it's a question of political and economic priorities. It's possible for us to do these things. Humanity is an incredibly adaptive species. It's possible for us to do these things. We just need to find a way to do it. And I think you're totally right that our political leaders are clearly not interested in this, and you know Australia is a very clear example. But I think we just have to look at the past. Almost every almost every major change in Australia in recent years has come not from the top but from the bottom. You know, we don't have to think about something like the same-sex marriage debate. Mm. It was not instituted by the top. In fact, our politicians were laggards and tried to prevent it for as long as they could, and actually that was won by ordinary people.
Jeff, you write in the book about electric cars. Would you see that as something that has to be driven by consumers? So, you know, how long is it going to take us to be able to afford an electric car? And at what point are we able to drive further than, you know, 200 kilometres in an electric car to make it more attractive to consumers? Is this again an example of what we can do in terms of making change from that grassroots?
Yeah, I write about electric cars in the context of the early history of the automobile, because again, car culture is something that we are often told that we are all to blame for. We all love our gas cars, our gas guzzlers, and you know, and you know, we complain if we can't have them. But actually, when you look at the early history of the car, in the late 19th, early 20th century, in fact, electric cars predominated across America, and many cities had networks of electric cars that were seen as technically more efficient and better than petrol-driven cars. And what happened was that the automobile industry destroyed them, consciously destroyed them, because they were more difficult to make money out of. And what we've seen since then is the creation of a culture where it's very, very difficult not to have a car. You know, that the best will in the world, our cities are designed in such a way that, you know, you need to drive to get certain places, or to, you know, to take your kids to school or whatever. So the perspective at which I come at this, I guess, is that we need to look at the context, and it's perfectly possible for us to live in ways that mean that we don't need the destructive kinds of transport that we already have, that the kinds of car-dependent cities were consciously created by the automobile industry in the early 20th century, and we don't need to live like that. We've got technologies already that would allow us to transport people in less destructive ways. The question is what we do with that technology. And I think that's really, really fundamental if we're ever going to get out of this situation. Yeah. Actually, we have most of the solutions already. The question is how is it we are going to be able to implement them?
Jeff, we've got your book here on the desk. How can people pick it up?
You know, all good bookstores, as they say, it's out through Scribe. So, you know, go into your local bookstore and they should have a copy.
And if you buy it online, do it early, given our...
Do it right now.
To get it for Christmas.
Oh, I see. I see where Justine's coming from. I missed that. Jeff, thank you for your time this morning. Always great to speak with you. Best wishes with your new book. We look forward to having a read, and let's chat again sometime early in the new year. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Okay, all the best.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, bye.
That was Jeff Sparrow talking about his new book, Crimes Against Nature, Capitalism and Global Heating. Should make a really good Christmas gift for someone, I reckon.
No, exactly, Tess.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.